Welcome back to the Stratcom podcast. I am so happy that today we're joined by Mr. Batu Kutelia. Ambassador Batu Kutelia is senior fellow in the Foreign Policy Research Institute's Eurasia program. He is a former ambassador to the USA and former head of Georgia's Foreign Intelligence Service. And he brings a wealth of experience in a range of political and diplomatic positions, most notably Undersecretary of the National Security Council of Georgia, Ambassador to the United States, Canada, and Mexico, and First Deputy Minister of Defense during the 2008 war with Russia. Ambassador, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. It's my pleasure and looking forward to our discussion.
Absolutely. Of course, understandably so, all eyes now are on Russia's aggression in Ukraine and Ukraine's heroic resistance. But of course, your country also has experience in resisting, in fighting back militarily against Russian aggression in 2008, when, as I already said, you served as First Deputy Minister of Defense. Could you tell us about this experience and some of the lessons that may apply still today?
Yes, Georgia apparently was a first victim of Russia's aggressive revisionism. That first time was openly declared by Russian President Vladimir Putin in Munich in 2007, Munich Security Conference, and then step by step implementing. And, well, militarily, Georgia was a first target, and we can argue why Georgia was chosen as a first target. Georgia was, at that time, the best performing democracy in this so-called post-Soviet space, term that I don't like, but that's how Russia perceived our region. So we were chosen as a first target to undermine the idea of liberal democracy expanding to that area. And it became evident later on in 2019 when at the G20 summit, just before Russia launched its second aggression against Ukraine, that this fight is against liberal democracy. Putin openly said that liberal democracy is already obsolete, and now he is offering some other form of government, so-called sovereign democracy, whatever it means, like it's a more like authoritarian form of governance, which other authoritarians got inspired by.
Sounds like some Orwellian wordplay,
yes.
Sovereign democracy.
Yes, exactly. And that's a kind of quote-unquote beauty of propaganda. They can mix all unmixable oxymoronous phrases together. So again, going back and zooming, Georgia was chosen as a first target, but even before military option, Russia tried other options to subdue Georgia. After the Rose Revolution particularly, we had an energy embargo, we had an economic embargo, we had cyber attacks. So all the components of what now we call a hybrid warfare, a new version of the hybrid warfare, has been tried in Georgia before the military invasion or in parallel of the military invasion. Fortunately to Georgia, notwithstanding that the rest of the democratic world was not that alarmed by Russia's aggressive revisionism at that time, resisted militarily, but more importantly, Georgia appeared to be resilient in terms of keeping its foreign policy orientation. Notwithstanding 2008 war that has been stopped at the doorsteps of capital of Georgia, Tbilisi, when Russian military were prepared to march, take down Georgian sovereign government. That was due to the help of American military ships and engagement of our Western partners, and we are thankful for them. Five European leaders flew in Tbilisi during the war. That was a big signal of support, but also stopped Russian further aggression and kept Georgia on track, pro-Western trajectory. So, but with host of this military aggression, then what we have seen, and it continues today, so that's why when we are speaking experience, it's an ongoing experience. Now we have in Ukraine military phase of this Russian aggressive revisionism, but Georgia is fighting its own fight, but in a different way, because we have now this Russian style of the state capture exercised through Russian oligarch and kleptocratic network or corruption that Russia deployed in Georgia and slowly eroded democracy from within, abusing the so-called the weaknesses of democracy through different means of overt and covert infiltration in the political spectrum. So this trajectory is ongoing, this war is ongoing. So what has happened or is happening in Georgia is the continuation or is connected processes that is happening in Ukraine right now or is happening in Moldova, in any vulnerable democracies on the border of Russia as more aggressive revisionist power.
Let's maybe a bit further discuss the trajectory that Georgia has gone undertaken in recent years. So, and the extent to which, in your view, the fates of Georgia and Ukraine are linked or separate. When it comes to responding to Russia's aggression in Ukraine, Georgia's current leaders have not only really failed to condemn it, but also refused to impose sanctions against Russia, for instance, and even attempted to pass this foreign agents law, mirroring something that would be possible in contemporary Russia. Could you explain to our viewers kind of why Georgia has gone down this path? Is it all a result of hostile foreign interference, or are there other factors at play?
Yes, as I mentioned, we are witnessing the Russian style of the state capture by Russian oligarch. And we see the worst and most pervasive form of corruption of the state capture that mimics or copy-paste the steps that Putin undertook capturing the power in Russia. That is taking under the control every state institution, taking under control media or harassing media, private businesses and political parties, political opponents. So eventually we ended up now in a situation where instead of, because of this historical experience that we discussed recently of Georgia had, we are natural Western partners and we have a Georgian population, citizens, 90% of Georgian citizens supporting Georgia's NATO and EU integration. But ridiculously so, we have a government who is manipulated or is acting as a proxy of informal rule of Russian oligarch, who is doing everything 180-degree different direction, bringing Georgia back to the orbit. And it did not happen instantly. It happened slowly. But the process of returning or bringing back to the Russian orbit Georgia accelerated after the Russian invasion in Ukraine. Because the current Georgian government and its informal ruler, Ivanishvili, they were keeping the facade of the pro-Westernness, while in reality they reattached Georgia economically, energetically, energy-wise, back to Russian market. And also all the financial systems now, as we see, is operating in Georgia as a helping hand to launder Russian money in Georgia. So it happened slowly and then accelerated rather fast. Like in Hemingway's famous novel, Sun Also Rises, when the guy got bankrupt and asked how you bankrupted, and he answers initially slowly and then suddenly. So we are in this suddenly process now. And part of this dynamic also is quite a well lessons learned of the Russian malign influence network. They learned their experience in Ukraine. Like with Yanukovych, they accelerated this process a little bit fast and Ukrainian society protested. They tried this in a more slow, like a boiling frog tactics in Georgia, and the upsets they got were rather minimal. Though there were few occasions where Georgian public protested. One was when the Russian communist MP Gavrilov came to Georgia and tried to project Georgia as a kind of a puppet, and Georgian people marching in the streets and the government had to use excessive force to disperse public.
Well, or Lavrov's family recently coming for Lavrov's wedding, right?
Yes, Lavrov's family was another occasion. The agent's law was also a very important event when public opposing. So that clearly showed that the Georgian public is against what the government is doing. But the problem of the state capture is that now we lack resources to change this unfortunate circumstances through democratic or through election means, because the state capture means that the government controls also all the institutions, whether it's an election commission or judiciary, to have smooth transition of the power. That is very alarming situation, because that can be used for further deterioration of situation in Georgia or instability, which Russia quite effectively done or attempted in several other places in Europe. So that makes Georgia even more vulnerable to Russian influence. And in a bigger picture, it's not only about Georgia, because after the Russia launched its war of aggression in Ukraine, Georgia on the Black Sea got a more importance than only Georgia. Georgia serve and could serve in the future a very important access to the Central Asia and the Caspian Sea, help Central Asian countries to bypass Russian sanctions. So price or the value for Russia to obstruct political situation in Georgia and openly take control over Georgia is much higher. Therefore, we think that environment that we have right now, without Western support, without more decisive Western policies, it might lead even to the further deterioration of security situation in Georgia and in the region.
So you mentioned these very troubling, I think is an understatement, these very dark developments domestically. But let's also talk about Georgian foreign policy. One quite shocking episode, I'm sure it was going viral on Twitter and elsewhere, was this appearance of Georgian Prime Minister Garibashvili at the GlobeSec conference in Bratislava recently, where he essentially blamed the war in Ukraine on a NATO enlargement and arguing that, you know, NATO enlargement and Ukraine's determination to become a NATO member was actually like a conflict stoking factor. This is a complete shift, seems to be a complete shift from transatlantic Georgia as a beacon that we were discussing in 2008, 2009. So what does this change mean for Georgia's relations with its strategic partners, with the US, the EU, NATO? Does Georgia still want to become a member state even?
Yeah, that's a very unfortunate development. As I said, we have a state capture, which means that even the formal guys who are in place and call themselves prime minister or ministers, they are not. Their legitimacy is not coming from the democratic elections and the public that gave votes to them or gave the mandate and legitimacy. They are accountable to the informal ruler, Russian oligarch, and therefore their positions, what they voice, is reflects actually the intentions of their patrons. And that's why we say that this is a pro-Russian or Russian state capture, and whatever Prime Minister Garibashvili voiced serves the Russian interest. But again, the ridiculousness of the situation is that the 90% of Georgians do not feel the same. All public opinions show that 90% of Georgia supports EU and NATO membership. And that's really a big challenge for us, but also for our Western partners, because what Russia is trying to prove in Georgia is that they can revert foreign policy orientation of Georgia that they've been trying since 2008. And to connect the dots, one of the reasons I think Russia decided to invade Georgia in 2008 was NATO's reluctance at that time to move forward and granting Georgia and Ukraine membership action plan or clear path towards the NATO membership. It was an important statement at that time that Georgia and Ukraine will join NATO. And since the breakup of Soviet Union, Georgia and Ukraine has been coupled, destined to be together in that quite a bumpy road for returning back to the European family of democracy. And Russia always was trying, and even prior to the invasion of Ukraine, we remember the Putin's ultimatum that if NATO retracts back its commitment to Ukraine and Georgia on NATO membership, he might reconsider. That was the propaganda stance that really has been repeated in GlobeSec by Georgian Prime Minister. And it's not about the NATO aspiration that triggered Russian war, just the opposite. Russian war is triggered by the Putin's or Russia's ambition to take this area or to resurrect some kind of a Soviet Union and to establish an area where democracy will not be flourishing on the Russian border. So this is the key challenge. And therefore, Georgia becomes prey of the Russian aggression that has started by military means, but then continued by state capture. That would be a very development for the idea of liberal democracy that needs to be protected, besides just giving the promises. So I hope that, and it's a like common mantra that every inch of NATO territory should be defended, and that was the reason why recently NATO expanded and Finland joined and Sweden is prepared to join the NATO. But I think NATO also have to protect every inch of its promise. And this promise was given to Ukraine and Georgia to join NATO, and that's what Russia is trying to target through different means, but with a similar tactics. That said, of course, the biggest Western ally for NATO and EU in Georgia is Georgian public. And with all the recent statements, we hear that Georgian public deserves. Yes, Georgian public deserves. Georgia contributed a lot to the NATO and Euro-Atlantic security. And we also trying to prove our adherence to the values of freedom and democracy while protesting what is happening in Georgia. But plus, additionally, I think there is a necessity to apply some external coercion on those who captured the state. And we recently seen some of the judges who served the informal ruler has been sanctioned. European Parliament recently adopted a resolution that Ivanishvili and some of his proxies needs to be sanctioned. And these are the powerful tools that West has in its capacity to change the direction where we are heading now because of these unfortunate developments.
I want to follow exactly this line of inquiry. You said the Georgian public is the main ally of the West. And indeed, you know, images of those protests, really, really powerful. Georgian protesters wielding the EU flag. And we see that protests in some cases have been effective, for instance, at, I believe, like putting a stop to this foreign agents law, or rather some sort of temporary pause, perhaps. But under conditions of state capture, protests themselves are not enough. So I'm wondering what, in your view, the West can do to help Georgia's civil society. You say some sanctions. Why do you think there has been a reluctance to impose more ambitious, more sweeping sanctions? What do you think is the best way forward from the engagement of the West perspective?
Well, again, as I said, what is happening in Georgia is part of this bigger context of democracy versus authoritarianism. That was quite well coined by U.S. President Biden in his inaugural speech. And I truly believe that we are at that stage now that authoritarianism is on offensive. And they has been on offensive, and Russia was leading on offensive. That's why I mentioned that Georgia was one of the first preys of that clearly demonstrated offensive. So again, Western support to Georgia should be part of the bigger strategy of protecting democracy where it is challenged. And democracy is challenged on the immediate borders of authoritarian countries.
But will imposing sanctions against those executing the state capture, does that not bear any risk of further tipping Georgia into the warm embrace of Russia?
Well, the problem of the state capture is that the country is run by the informal actors rather than the formal institutions. So sanctioning those informal agents of the Russian influence will open up space for normal democratic processes. And that's why I said the Georgian people is a Western ally. So Western sanctions on those who are obstructing democracy is the support of your allies, Western allies in Georgia. Of course, there is a lot of things that we have to do as a Georgian public. We have to exercise our rights, but external support on one regard is sanctioning. But plus, also, I think there should be an important component of Western engagement in terms of consolidating democracy, helping democratic institutions or democratic processes, helping political parties, NGOs who have experience and knowledge how to design the positive agenda. Because what state capturers did, they hijacked the entire political agenda to quite a well-streamlined propaganda stunts. For example, about this warmongering that one of the propaganda lines is that West is trying to drag Georgia into the war. Everything is like it's Orwellian. It's just the opposite. West protected Georgia from being a prey of Russian aggression, and West is trying to do everything Georgia not to be another subject of Russian direct military attack, which might be an option if Georgia will not collective security umbrella. But what is happening now is that, and I just showed you, there is a reporting that Georgia became one of the biggest trading partners for Russia, helping Russia bypass sanctions. It's a very dark stain on Georgia, historic stain that will stay when everyone who is distancing, even traditional Russian allies are trying to distance themselves from Russia. And with the captured Georgian state, current Georgian government is moving closer.
Cashing in
and moving closer to Russia. So that needs to be corrected, but internal resources are not enough. And that's why this situation should be viewed in a wider bigger Western policy towards the region. That's why we advocate to see more than policy towards Black Sea region as a geopolitical identity. This is very important for the future European security, but also 100% coincides to the national security interests of Georgia. On the other hand, as I said, it's not only about Georgia, but it's also Georgia serving a strategic bridgehead towards the east. And there are a lot of other important processes happening in the region, in the Caucasus, and in Central Asia that needs to be connected. And of course, that's where West should have more clear-cut and forward-leaning policies instead of being just reacting on the game plan that Russia is trying to suggest, Russia is suggesting or trying to obstruct. In terms of the sanctions as well, that was an important justification of the European Parliament resolution. Two components. One is an obstruction of democracy and another aiding Russia to bypass sanctions. So these are two important and legitimate foundations based on which Western sanctions have a legitimacy in terms of the Georgian public as well. So it's not that Georgia as a country will be sanctioned, but those who are trying to divert Georgia from its natural path of democratic transformation, who are hijacking the democratic statecraft process, they will be sanctioned.
So amidst this threat landscape, but also at the same time, Russia's military setbacks in Ukraine, what is Georgia's current capacity to resist this ongoing creeping occupation, creeping annexation in Russian-occupied regions of Georgia? Has Russia been forced to reduce its military presence there and move some of its assets to Ukraine, or is the situation still as dire as before?
Well, Russian military occupation of 20% and two parts of Georgian territory, its Khinvali region and Abkhazia, has been used by Russia as a leverage to influence domestic politics in Georgia and as a one component of the hybrid warfare. But now when Russian militaries are facing tremendous losses in Ukraine because of the brave resistance of Ukrainian soldiers, by the way, Georgia is the second biggest participant in terms of military contribution of the Ukrainian armed forces. Georgian Foreign Legion is the biggest.
Volunteer fighters.
Volunteer fighters who are part of Ukrainian armed forces, and we are the biggest participants in that. And it has also the reasons why Georgian soldiers are fighting shoulder to shoulder with Ukrainians, because of the understanding that it's our common fight.
I was going to ask, can you tell a little bit, who are these people? Why are they joining this fight?
Yeah, I be diverted from your question, but to answer this question, these are the Georgian military professionals who served in Georgian armed forces, who served in many missions in Afghanistan and Iraq, and who know how the NATO standard or Western standard military operations are conducted. Georgian contingent was very actively engaged since 2014 when Russia annexed Crimea, surely due to the involvement of the Georgian contingent together with Ukrainian fighters. At that time, Mariupol was saved under the Ukrainian control. And in Bakhmut, Georgian soldiers just got the highest death toll because it was the biggest battleground in a recent military development. But these are the Georgian patriots who are fighting there, and they are fighting for Georgian cause as well, because as I said, Georgia and Ukraine were destined together to find our way back to the European family of democracies. But going back to the occupied territories, yes, some contingent has been moved back to the front lines, but Russian military planning, I don't think they are operating that smoothly. And the quality of those troops who've been stationed in Georgia are not that high. Again, as I said, the military preparedness level of the troop is very low because they had a different mission there rather than military, as to keep them as a fear-mongering tool to support other hybrid and the propaganda narratives in Georgia. But interestingly, to connect the two dots as well, what you mentioned with our Prime Minister was saying on the GlobSec that, NATO might be the reason for war. Another dot to connect is that West is trying to drag us into the war, which Georgian government constantly repeats. And now this third narrative they just injected is that maybe because we are pleasing Russia and Putin's regime, they will return occupied territories back. So I think the connecting of the, and of course it will not happen, Russia, but as a propaganda stunt, these two dots connected together clearly show that it's not an instant reaction. It's a well-planned informational cloud around the, it's an operation, and this informational cloud that supports the state capture, that is trying to seed apathy in Georgian public and not to let them protest what is happening in front of our eyes as a Russian state capture. So yes, that's a connected vessel, unfortunately, but Georgia became a connected vessel to the Russian political, economic, or Russian version of the divided world with the spheres of influences. Whether this will be successful finally or not largely will depend on the on-the-ground military success of Ukraine. But of course, besides military success, we need a more forward-leaning Western policies as well in a wider context. So thanks for this opportunity of connecting Georgian issues and speaking about the bigger picture and not separately isolated Georgia or separately isolated Ukraine case.
But from your perspective, would the military defeat of Russia in Ukraine also open up the prospects for Georgia to liberate its occupied territories, or perhaps for Moldova or other countries whose territories are under the Russian occupation?
Yes. Usually all the autocracies or the tyrannies, they rely, as Orwell once said, wrote in his works, on two big pillars. This is the force and the fraud. So once this fraud is exposed, then the force remains the key pillar. So that's why it's important for us to make Russia cause a complete and absolute military defeat, because it will start the composition of this kind of imperialistic Russia. It will be a beginning of decolonization of Russia. And of course, that's an opportunity of all captive nations. And Georgia, Ukraine, and other Soviet republics were captive nations of the Soviet Union. But decolonization 2.0 will start after Russia's military defeated Ukraine. That had started the Soviet decolonization when they inflicted the defeat in Afghanistan, because that exposed all the brutal and ugly side of this empire. But still, this job has not been finished after Soviet Union was dissolved. And we, together with our Western partners, democratic world, has to finish this job, because it's still unfinished job. And of course, the another component of the unfinished job is this idea, value-based idea, that was very inspiring for all of us who've been on the front line against Russia, is Europe, whole and free and in peace. And this idea brought a lot of peace, security and stability to the Europe, but few gaps or few countries are missing. Ukraine, Moldova and Georgia are the missing part of it. And I hope after this military defeat, this project of Europe, whole and free and in peace will be finalized. And that will be a prerequisite of a long-lasting peace and stability in Europe. But moreover, that will be a very important signal to other authoritarian regimes, and that using force or the coercion is not the way the future world order should be constructed on.
Ambassador Kutelia, thank you so much. I really hope that your country will rejoin firmly the path to the Euro-Atlantic family. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. And I'm very optimistic. We shall prevail. Thank you.
Thank you.